Support for Commodity Week Online comes from Strategic Farm Marketing, now offering a fall look-back option that will add 50 cents per bushel to your revenue claim. Details at sfarmmarketing.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the February 28th edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Here's our short list of topics. Have soybeans topped? What should we make of the Louis Dreyfus tanker loaded with corn ethanol bound for Brazil? Ukraine, an exporter of grain, but is China getting its fair share of corn? And AgriSure Duracade, an unapproved for trade GMO in the marketplace. We'll discuss these and many more topics with our panelists, including Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes from right here in Champaign County. She's with Stuart Peterson. Our special guest today, Tom Slate of the U.S. Grains Council.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Let's turn our attention now to Tom Slate, who joins us from San Antonio, where he's at the Commodity Classic. Tom is the president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. Tom, thanks for taking time from your busy schedule there. We do appreciate that. Has the Classic been going well?
Well, Todd, yeah, thanks. It's been going fine. You know, very busy, as always, record crowd. So it's been very, very good.
The U.S. Grains Council yesterday released a statement on AgriSure Duracade. This has to do somewhat with Viptura as it relates to some cancellations and stoppage of grain deliveries to China earlier in the year. What does the Grains Council have to say about this GMO that's not covered in parts of Europe and China for trade?
Well, I think the thing that we're focusing on right now is that you know, it's important for all farmers to recognize what's at stake, you know, what they put in the ground and what they come to their final planning decisions. You know, we do have, you know, unapproved traits, particularly in China, I know there's a stewardship plan for a limited launch of the Duracade seed. And we're going out there kind of reminding folks that a lot's at stake, you know, if those unapproved varieties leak out of this system and into the export market, it can cause a lot of havoc and certainly cost people money. And so we are just trying to encourage producers to treat these agreements very, very vigilantly.
Tom, what reasoning does the Grain Council have for the lower Japanese export demand? And a second part of that question is, do you expect it to rebound to higher levels anytime soon?
The Japanese demand, you said?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, I believe we're seeing certainly economy recovering in Japan, but certainly a recovery, a return to the U.S. as a supplier. I think actually one of the odd benefits of the drought years was the fact that customers like Japan became to understand the U.S.'s ability as a reliable supplier, you know, not having holdups, delays in ports and things like that. So I think the Japanese have come back and come back strongly to the U.S. as a source of supply. And of course, I think there's other things going on here too in terms of, you know, supporting their own domestic meat industries as something that the new Abe government certainly has been taunting.
Tom, I think Jackie Bakes' question has to do with year over year, the 2013 or 2012 versus the 2013 imports of U.S. corn into Japan, that is. Mm-hmm. But they're not running at as fast a pace, at least at the moment, as they had been even in the drought-stricken years. So the question is, why is that running behind? You would think that the rest of the world has been using a lot more corn, but the Japanese have not.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think there are, you know, certainly some issues in Japan where there's a leveling off of demand in certain places. I mean, you know, Japanese We've seen this happen over the years as, you know, the population has actually stabilized in Japan. I think that we're seeing that effect. And I think, again, this is why the Abe government is certainly trying to prop up those domestic feed and livestock industries so this continues. But I think in Japan, it's been kind of a problematic market. We in terms of, you know, what's going to happen in the future, been a great market in the past. But we do see in the future as that, you know, the array of products they're going to import from the United States is going to change. It's not going to be as heavily on grain. There'll be a more mixed palette of, you know, grain and soybeans and livestock and meat products and so forth. So I think you're seeing that happen, too.
Ellen Dearden, do you have a question for Tom Slate?
I do. Australia. Next week they're supposed to put out, I believe it's on Tuesday, an estimate of their 14-15 wheat production. And it looks like a bumper Australian wheat crop, probably add a little bearishness to prices. Is this just a one-year deal, or are we geared up more for bigger Australian crops to come?
Well, I think Australia has always been a little, you know, one country that's kind of hard to predict, you know, with the, you know, struggles they've had with drought in the past. But, you know, with this kind of wheat crop, you know, projected to come on, you know, that they are going to be strong competitors, particularly in the feed wheat market, and it's something we're watching very closely.
And Pete Manhart.
This Trans-Pacific Partnership, is that going to go anywhere, or they just don't trust our president to be able to get support for it?
Well, I think, you know, the answer is probably yes to both those questions. I believe it's going to go somewhere. When it gets there is a big question. You know, it was very interesting in the Japanese, actually, last week, you know, made a statement that, having trade promotion authority passed in Japan was not necessarily a blockage to, continuing negotiations on the TPP. I think that's more posturing. There's no question about it that, you know, a lot of countries are looking to what's going to happen both with TPA negotiations as they, you know, Trade Promotion Authority negotiations as they negotiate the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And I believe they also know that a couple of different things are happening that could change the pace of the TPP negotiations, is that the president is going to Asia in April. And a lot of times what we, you know, traditionally see is when we have a trade agreement in balance and a president goes to that particular region, things seem to happen. Now, I don't necessarily would be one to predict that it will. I think that the more, you know, safer prediction is that something might be put off until the lame duck session after the elections. That's what a lot of folks are thinking and believing right now, because, you know, Trade Promotion Authority is a key component to getting everyone. You know, we have, again, 1,100 countries negotiating on the TPP, and then, of course, with Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, we're just getting started. So I know they're all talking about it, but I think negotiators, they had made some progress here last week in Singapore, and we sure hope that that continues.
Tom, I'm going to ask you just one last question, and maybe you have something else that you want to cover before I let you go, about Venezuela, or even simply about the Latin American countries and Mexico, potential exports there. What kind of problems are created with Venezuela and Ukraine in particular when they're having problems?
Yeah, well, it's always an exciting world. You got to pay attention to the world headlines if you're a U.S. Farmer. I've always felt that. In the Americas, I think we're going to see some continued, I believe, strong growth in Mexico. Mexico and Colombia in particular, we've seen some real bounce back. Venezuela's kind of an interesting one. I mean, they were a top five market for U.S. corn here a couple of years ago, and I think they can continue to be a good buyer for corn. But, you know, with the troubles they have, you're not really sure how that's going to play on the market. That's something to really watch. In Ukraine, we've already seen where Ukrainian farmers are holding on to grain as a better currency than their own currency. And prices for corn in Ukraine have actually risen by about $7 to $8 a ton which has made them uncompetitive in a lot of markets where they are strongly competitive in, particularly North Africa, in particular Egypt, where the U.S. has, you know, made some sales here in recent weeks. And, you know, so you've always got to be ready. You've always got to be aware. We've been following this, you know, what's happening in the Ukraine very, very closely in terms of what's going to be that spillout and their overall competitiveness for this marketing year. And again, we're seeing some pickup in sales in North Africa.
Well, Tom, we do appreciate you being with us. I know you're busy there at the Commodity Classic in San Antonio. Have a good time and get a lot of good business done.
All right. That's what we'll do. We'll keep after it all around the world.
All right. Thanks so much. That is Tom Slate. He's the president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. He was talking with us here on Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio includes Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, and then on the phone lines, Ellen Dearden of AgriView and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities. Let's talk a little bit about the marketplace. We'll start with you, Ellen Dearden, because I think the soybean market is an interesting one, and we want to know whether this thing is topping out or if there's something else yet to happen in that marketplace to keep pushing it higher.
Well, it was a pretty wild ride at the end of the week, including a Thursday that had about a 50-some-cent trading range in the nearby beans. A lot of these companies have shifted bids off of the March and into the May, but we saw on the Friday close, we saw the May with its best gain. So we've, instead of having a big inverse in the March-May, now those are trading at about even money. That, to me, shows a slowdown in demand on the beans. We couldn't get back up to the highs that we made on Thursday, about a dime shy of them in the new crop, too. So I think this bean market's acting a little tired. It may be time that the corn market takes a little precedence over beans.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Ellen. I think when you look at the fact that they're importing beans right now out of Brazil into the eastern part of the United States, that's beginning to come to light. There was a lot of talk yesterday about the fact that China is saying they're going to stop taking imports into one of their largest northern ports because they're backed up and they don't have enough storage space to unload all the ships. All of that is beginning to filter in, and so that just backs up the fact that you're saying things are slowing down. Well, I think that the news is becoming less bullish than it was also.
Well, Pete Manhart, on that note, there is some news and out of South America today that suggests that the crop size there continues to get smaller.
Yeah, the SAFRIS, or however you pronounce it, said that the crop sizes there are smaller in both corn and beans, and that had us going. But after the 60-cent drop from the highs yesterday in old beans and the new beans at 82 yesterday, then backed off to 54. We didn't get close to those today. I mean, May beans were at 45 yesterday. We closed at 14. That's 31 off that high. And the new November's at 82 yesterday. They got back to 70, but closed at 69, 13 off that high. So was Thursday's event really real, or was Friday's event where we came back real? And that South American smaller crop size by the government agency helped push them higher. There's still all kinds of private estimates out there that it's still the largest ever soybean crop out of South America, and that is being shipped out the best ever to the rest of the world.
So which is your thought? Do you think it was Thursday or Friday that was the real event?
Well, it was, and corn and wheat, it totally reversed and actually made up more than it lost on Thursday. So corn and wheat down that far, they'd been pulled up by the beans themselves. I think we might have seen the high here for a while and now be looking to sell bounces instead of looking to buy breaks in corn. I don't know if we have the answer yet, because we did make a new contract high on Friday at 71.5.
That's true. And the only thing that we have to make sure we temper our thinking with is the fact that today was the last day of a month. And as we move into export sales next week, you know, everybody's going to do the same thing they did yesterday. They're going to see if there are any cancellations. And if China would come in and buy beans again, then I think, you know, we could possibly bounce back up to those higher levels. But I think when you look at the 1450, it's a pretty tough place, that 52, to get through.
I think I'd like to poll each of you. Despite whether you think this is the top or a or whether this is a pause. Is it a place to finish off old crop sales? And we'll just do a quick yes or no, starting with you, Jackie Vance.
Well, I'm going to say yes.
Ellen Dearden?
I say absolutely.
And Pete Manhart?
Yes, and if you want to stand by a cheap July call.
All right, and then turn your attention to the corn market for me, Ellen Dearden, this week. That December contract at 471.5 finished the week up 7.25 cents. Where does it go from here?
Well, we've had an upside target around this 480 area, and that remains intact. The only thing that really would have killed that prospect would have been some closes here under about 450, and we didn't, you know, even come close to that on the Friday break. We got to 460.25. So I still think this 480 area, 484 area is an upside target.
And Pete Manhart?
Yeah, we've been looking at 78 to 82 for probably 3 months. We've come from that low at 410, and here we are at 71.5. I would be protecting the downside and starting to shell out a little bit of grain cash-wise and protect the downside also.
Well, I especially think, you know, the targets are basically the same, but I think that when you saw them talk about the EPA increasing ethanol mandate from 13 billion gallons to 13.5, and then we couldn't go all the way up there, it's still a target. I think the market is still very tepid, and it can't make up its mind exactly what it wants to do. And you can't identify just how much was pushed because, as Dennis Gartman came out yesterday and said, buy corn at the market, and he was a big mover of the market last year. You know, so Monday's going to be a whole new month and a whole new look.
It'll be an interesting day on Monday. Tuesday will be an interesting day, too. That's usually when things change over at the All-Day Ag Outlook. Over the years, it's a luck of the draw, I guess. It's been kind of a bad day some days, weather-wise and market-wise. So it'll be an interesting one to watch. I guess it's the timing of when that particular event happens that creates the odds on that there might be a turn on that day. I'm wondering, though, why it is that despite the fact, as we came into the end of the year, that everybody was just really bearish, that this marketplace remains where it is, and what might be laying out there that is holding it up. And I don't know. Is it? I don't know what it is. It doesn't look like it's livestock usage for grains.
Look at exports. Exports last year were 736. They're projecting them 1.6, and the way we've been selling them, it could be higher than that for the old crop and then new crop. You know, usage, the rest of the world is eating more and better. China has 400-plus million middle class. They're eating more meat. They need more corn. They need more meal. So I think it's usage of those exports that have just really ballooned this year. Beans are already, what, 106%? I think before Thursday or Friday's announcement, already 106% of what USDA says we're going to export there. So usage, I think, and the projection of more usage in a world that is growing and getting better economically is pushing things up on the usage end.
Well, we, of course, are in the middle of Commodity Week. It is our flagship program here at willag.org. You can find it on our website. Again, at willag.org. We will host our All-Day Ag Outlook. That's over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on Tuesday. We're looking forward to having you there if you happen to have your ticket. Be sure to stay with us for the second part of our program.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This program comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Meteorologist Ed Kieser now joins us for a look at the weather forecast in South America.
A mix of weather conditions continues across South American grain production areas. In general, some improvement has occurred this week and more is expected in the coming week. The area under greatest weather risk continues to be eastern Brazil. Much of Minas Gerais and Bahia have been dry since mid-January and are in the midst of an agricultural drought. Scattered showers and thunderstorms are expected in the coming week to help improve topsoil moisture, but it is likely that the underlying dryness is not going to end for a while. We'll need to continue to monitor this area. It should be noted that not all crops in Minas Gerais and Bahia have been impacted by this growing drought. Many fields are double cropped, and the first crops were harvested at the beginning of the dry spell. The impact from this drought is on late planted full season crops and especially second season crops, including safrinha corn. This region produces about 20% of Brazil's corn and soybeans, so it is likely the impact from this drought will only be on 10% or less of Brazil's crop. Farther west and south in Brazil, rainfall has increased and more is on the way. That includes soil moisture improvement for much of neighboring and previously dry Goiás and Sao Paulo. Abundant rainfall is expected to continue this week in Mato Grosso and Mato Grosso do Sul. That rain will benefit filling crops, but continue to slow first crop harvesting and second crop planting. Meanwhile, Paraguay and South Brazil should receive near average rainfall in the coming week. In Argentina, there is finally a break in the rain, and only a little rainfall is expected in the coming week. This break will help fields dry out and allow for a pickup in early corn and sunflower harvesting. Temperatures will remain unseasonably cool, highs mostly in the 70s, maintaining stress-free conditions for filling crops.
Our thanks, of course, go to meteorologist Ed Kieser. Here are the weekly changes as they finished up at the CME Group in Chicago. March corn this week had a high on the week at $4.59, a low at $4.45 and a half. The settlement price continued its uptrend at $4.57 and a half, up 4.5 cents for the week. December corn at 471 and a half, up 7 1/4. March beans at 1452 and a quarter top, a bottom at 1369 and a quarter, that on the weekly trade, settled $14.14 and a quarter cents, up 43 and a half cents a bushel. And November beans at $11.69 and a quarter, finished 15 and a half cents higher. March bean meal at $4.67.90, up $12.10. March bean oil at $41.52, up $0.57. The soft red winter wheat at $5.99 finished 10 3/4 cents lower. July at $6.08 1/4 in the soft red, down a penny. That was an outside down week. April live cattle finished at $144.97 1/2, up $3.52 1/2. The March feeders at $171.70, up a buck. And April lean hogs at $106.85, up $7.50. This program comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, the WILL studios. Thank you for listening.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Now this is the February 28 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities and Ellen Dearden of AgriView, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson. We talked earlier in the program with Tom Slate, the president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. We're taking up a bit of the corn market at this time, and I'm wondering whether you agree, Ellen, with Pete's thought process about the increases in the export market and whether that can really continue to hold the corn market higher.
Well, I think that, and plus the ethanol situation, I mean, we've got good ethanol margins, and we've continued to grind really pretty hard in here. I think at the end of the year, Todd, we were still really focused on supply. Big supply, what are we going to do with it? And, you know, here we are 2 months later, and now we're focusing on demand as we should. And I think we had to get past that grain stocks report at the end of December, in order to start really looking at the demand side of things.
Well, if we focus on demand, Jackie Vakes, It would seem to me that if you look at both the cattle and the hog markets, which have been on fire to the upside because of, well, short supplies, that demand for grains and oilseeds to feed that sector might slacken a lot.
Oh, they may or they may not. I mean, you know, one of the things that we're seeing this year is a shift over from use of DDGs to corn. So, you know, until we actually get further into the feeding year, I think that supports the number that they've got for the feed. And when you look at the PEDV situation, and yes, we're losing, but, you know, if you lose 2% of the herd, you have to gain 5 to 6 pounds on each market-worthy pig. That's not an awful lot. And they consume more corn than the beginning pig does. So, you know, it's going to balance itself out. But I'm certainly with Pete and Ellen. I think when you look at the fact that China and Unknown have been big buyers, those people, you know, when you start to see China coming in and buying, we don't know what our acreage is going to be yet. You know, we don't know if it's going to be bigger than USDA said or lower. We know gas consumption last year went up by 1.1%. That's the highest increase since 2004. That certainly supports ethanol. And you were talking earlier about the ship going out with the ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, when you look at that, we're exporting to more countries right now than we ever have. You know, China, Brazil, India, the Philippines, Canada. And I think that market will continue to grow. One of the things seeping in at the moment, too, and for a while now because of this extremely brutal winter that we've had, is will we have a late spring? And if we have a late spring, that would favor planting more beans and less corn. So I think you look at the big picture, and we just have tremendous amount of fund buying that has come into this market.
Well, we need to ramp up our well, go ahead, Pete.
In that meat sector, too, we are raising heavier hogs and actually producing more beef, more of it. And in beef, we also are raising heavier weights, and those last few pounds take more corn. So that increases usage, and we have more middle class in the world to eat more meat.
We do need to wrap up our program. We'll get a final thought from each of our panelists. We'll start with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson.
Well, I'll say what I've said so many times. You need to have yourself prepared for whatever the market does, you know, either going higher or lower, because there's nothing worse than making a sale and feeling bad about having done it and not making a sale and feeling really bad about having done it.
Ellen Dearden?
Watch the sugar market. Sugar's a tip-off. We've had a big rally there, and that means that we're going to be exporting a lot more ethanol into Brazil.
And Pete Manhart.
Protect the downside, and if you want to stay in it from sales or protecting, buy some calls that you know what the cost is instead of losing something down the road.
Well, that wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. My thanks to Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County, and our special guest, Tom Slate, President and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. You have a great week.